On this month's Over the Fence, we discuss our favorite games of the fall season. The next World of Warcraft expansion has been announced. Star Wars The Old Republic is upon us. EA adds more publishers to Origin. Shigeru Miyamoto is retiring from Nintendo. Or is he? All this and more on Over the Fence for December 2011.
Welcome to Over the Fence, a podcast for adventuring gamers to discuss the worlds of gaming, entertainment, and technology. With us this week, we have Jonathan.
Hello.
We have Patrick.
Guten Tag.
We have Chad.
Howdy do.
We have David.
Whee!
And I'm Eric. And we're kind of getting into this in, it's now December, so we've gotten most of the big releases of the month out of our blood, and
so
many of us have started playing.
So many. Just so many, really.
So many!
None of which I could actually get, because I have basically no money right now.
Yeah,
so,
me too.
I feel your pain.
Sad.
Mm. Well, for those of us who have been playing some of the fall games,
Rich bastard.
Are your favorites and what are you liking, disliking?
Well, I don't know if any of the rest of y'all have played Skyrim, but I have. Skyrim, for me, is kind of the best and worst things of RPG games. Massive, huge world, except it's kind of all black, white, gray colors. There isn't really a wide palette unless you go into particular dungeons. Mm-hmm. Which I have to say that if there is one and only one strength for Skyrim, it's the dungeons. They are many and varied, and there are a couple that kind of cookie cutter formula, but then for every one of those there's 10 others that are just completely different than anything else that you've seen in the game, which is what's great. After a while, though, the game has procedurally generated content. I don't know if you've heard about that. Cool. That is to say that the game never ends.
It's constantly creating quests and such.
Yeah, and it also cheats. Like, you can't take your quest log and say, I'm gonna hammer out all these quests, because as you walk around doing quests, you'll overhear conversations, and quests automatically add to your quest log.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we saw this dog, and like, next thing you know, I've got to go find out about some dog outside the town. I'm like, what the hell? I didn't agree to a quest about a dog. I totally would not agree to a quest about a dog. And so after a while, I had side quested as much as I could tolerate. Usually in most games, I side quest until all the side quests are done, but there's no such thing. So after a while, I'm like, okay, damn it, I have to do the main quest line. And I did, and I finished it, and I had to finish it because Assassin's Creed was coming out, and I needed some Assassin's Creed in my life, because as good as they've improved Skyrim over Oblivion, it doesn't have the visceralness of stabbing someone through the skull that you get from Assassin's Creed.
Double stab!
And they do have, everything's, akimbo. You have, dual spells or dual swords or a sword and a spell, or, if you have dual same spell, you can have a higher charge. It's pretty cool.
That's cool.
The world has fast travel, so buying a horse is kind of a waste. After you've been someplace, you can warp right back to there, either direction with no problems.
That's pretty nice.
And I also killed my first horse accidentally.
Congratulations.
They said you could go up the side of the mountain without a problem with the horse. So I tried that, and he tripped and he fell and he died. And I was like, well, that was 5,000 gold, and I don't have another 5,000 gold.
I've got to say that, like, of all the games that I've seen, I want that game.
The only thing is, I don't think you have the time for that game.
Well, winter break, possibly.
Remember I complained about how Nintendo was doing the massively single-player game?
I thought you were just talking about that.
Well, I was complaining because, how dare Nintendo coin something or patent something that's already been coined by somebody else, which was something they created for Oblivion.
Right.
Well, this is that kind of thing. And if you take the perception of grind and the length of time that you get out of an MMO, you kind of get that with Skyrim without the multiplayer aspect.
Mm. Well, the thing that's interesting is that the release of Skyrim has driven me to play Oblivion, basically for the first time, which... you know, I hadn't really played that extensively before, so I just started a new game, started over. And the thing is, I collectively have put about 20 hours into that game and haven't actually done that much. Like, yeah. I guess that's one of the appeals of the game. It really just draws you in.
One of the people I read on one of the sites or podcasts I listened to said that, you know, their first focus is the game points you in this direction and says, here you go to begin your quest. And he's like, I turn around and go the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately do other stuff. The problem with Oblivion is that not all the content matches your level. And so if you wander too far from, you know, the path, you will find things that you simply can't kill.
Yeah.
You do have to do some grinding there. But
I
didn't like the way you do the grind in Oblivion, because if you pick a set of skills and talents in the very beginning and you don't use just those skills as you play the game, you won't level up.
Mm.
So I think I beat Oblivion with cheats at level 27, whereas I beat Skyrim with minimal cheats. Like if I'm on the wrong side of the mountain and I've got to go across the entire map to get to the other side of the mountain to go up the path that goes up the mountain, like, fuck that. TCL, no clipping. I'm going to fly up there. Sorry. But even with that, I still hit level 48. So... I think I don't know about you, the rest of y'all, but I think I played most of the games this fall that were the big hits, like Deus Ex, Modern Warfare.
Deus Ex, Jesus Christ, people, Deus Ex. It's Latin.
Modern Warfare 3. you know what? It's never. If you see
DC,
let me show you this. If you see part like this,
part de,
part de. So it, with. If you
That's
switch
it's the French.
For the S, it's deuce. I don't care. It's never said in the game, so it doesn't matter. Anyway.
No, the reason it's a big deal is because one's deuce X sounds like we're talking about poop. Deus Ex is from the phrase Deus Ex Machina.
No, it doesn't matter. It's never said in the game. It has no material effect on the storyline. It has no worth as a point. Moving on.
Okay.
I've played Modern Warfare 2. Or Modern Warfare 3, sorry. I've played the... Assassin's Creed. I still haven't touched Batman. I've been like saving that because I just I know I'm gonna love that. So I'm just like, that's gonna be like when I'm finally done, ready for like a game. You know, that's when I finally hit it.
I haven't played a whole lot of the new games. I've basically got three of the fall titles that I'm sitting on. The one that I've started is the Metal Gear Solid HD Collection, which so far I'm enjoying.
All of them?
What? Say again?
Is that all of them?
It's actually Metal Gear Solids 2, 3, and Peace Walker, which is a PSP game with a multiplayer component. So it's basically the middle third of Metal Gear Solid.
I was going to say, if they did the first one, that would be kind of interesting, because that one was kind of chunky butt on the old PlayStation 1.
Yeah, I bought Metal Gear Solid 1 on PlayStation Network, and I'm very much stuck at trying to kill Sniper Wolf, because I don't think I'm able to take the pills that I need correctly. I haven't figured out the right button combination for that. I'm very much enjoying it, and it's really interesting to see this being the game that, you know, pioneered the heavy storytelling trumping gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
It's also frustrating because in a lot of places, the heavy storytelling trumps the gameplay.
I read that sometimes the dialogue and the delivery is kind of nonsensical.
Yeah, there's a lot of things, especially once you get into Metal Gear Solid 2, there's a lot of things that just are WTF about the entire thing.
Yeah. That's one of the things I enjoyed about that game, though, is because, like, you get to that point in the game where things just stop making sense, and so it almost feels like, I don't even, what? And it sort of adds to the whole feeling of it, like, you know. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, some of the line deliveries are just bad, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can definitely tell from watching clips in the Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3 remakes that I've been poking around with a little bit, and, you know, Metal Gear Solid 1. You can definitely tell some the people who got better at voice acting and that, particularly the guy who plays Atacan. And David Hayter's always been decent, but he just has some terrible lines to work with in MGS1.
Crab battle!
That one shooter.
Sorry,
I think I have to get the name of it.
And I talk like this.
What was that shooter? I can't remember the name of it. It looked like... The character looked like Master Chief from Halo, but it was a... Japanese shooter. I can't think of the name of it. Either way, it's like you can tell, like, after you watch gameplay snippets of people talking in the game, you can tell it's a Japanese game that has been made American.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you can, there's that weird pacing of the text or the language, because you can tell that it just didn't fit the same spaces. And that's one of the things that kind of drives me crazy in some of these games. It's like, I'm like, is it really that hard to change the time code of the way these characters interact? Mm-hmm. I mean, you have control over the 3D characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, how is this a problem?
There's actually a couple problems like that in the original Halo, which carry over a bit based on what I've seen actually still into the remake, just because one of the problems is actually because of the fact that Cortana, I think I read somewhere, I don't actually have proof of this, but was originally supposed to be English, like an English character. And so a lot of those lines are written with an English character in mind, and she'll say things like sod off, or like, you know, well, we, you know, just, I don't know, just things that would sound, and you can tell because she delivers them strangely.
You know, somebody said something about the English girl being a sex pot, and I was like, I don't get that correlation. Where does that come from?
You need to watch any of the Doctor Who episodes that has Amy in them, and it'll make sense.
Well, she's not English, though. She's Scottish, which is a difference.
Oh, good point.
Well, so anyway, moving back, I don't know if we covered Deus Ex, but we had the problem with the language. Like, there comes a point like, okay, I just want to get to shoot somebody. Shut up. Because, like the cutscenes or the talking parts were like 4 or 5 times the length of my tolerance. And I sat through every one of them the first time through, but any follow-up playthrough, I'm like, skip.
Ever play Metal Gear Solid 4, because it has, I'm not kidding you, a 40-minute long cutscene.
Wait, what? Oh, my God. Yeah.
I skipped the cutscene that is in the demo, and I kind of missed out because I don't know what's going on and what I'm supposed to do. And I mean, I've beaten all the Splinter Cell games, but I guess Metal Gear Solid is a completely different experience. But in any case,
it really is.
So the other AAA titles, I played Modern Warfare 3. Everyone hates it because Infinity Ward isn't what they used to be, and the multiplayer is fine, but there is definitely some polish and some experience lacking from it that was present in Modern Warfare 2 when the big cheeses were still part of Infinity Ward. Mm-hmm. The single player wasn't bad, but it was incredibly easy.
That's sad.
Which is really not. I mean, Call of Duty single player is like training for multiplayer, so it's gonna hammer you and enemies are going to spawn in weird locations. I mean, the only time I really died in Modern Warfare 3 was when a grenade would land with laser precision right next to me, and I didn't have enough time to run away from it. My big gem this fall has been Assassin's Creed. I know Skyrim is what most people like, but Assassin's Creed, you know, is you know, the one I was looking forward to the most. The environments in Assassin's Creed Revelations are kind of like the best mixture of, like, my favorite place in Assassin's Creed 1 was Damascus. It had the best color palette, the best buildings, in my opinion. It's kind of like Damascus plus the color palette from Venice from Assassin's Creed 2, plus the combat innovations that came with Brotherhood. It's kind of all of that in one. The only thing that they did wrong was this stupid tower defense thing that they added if your dens get taken over. If you play meticulously, you can avoid all but the training mission.
I'm very much looking forward to that. I'm probably about half of the way through Brotherhood right now, which I'm kind of taking my time with it, doing a lot of the side quests and just derping around with leveling up my Brotherhood.
Well, there's advantages to that. Like, there's unlocks if you finish all of the quests for, you know, the courtesans and the thieves and everything.
Yeah.
When you do that, you unlock outfits, so it's worth doing at least once. One of the outfits is Raiden.
I've tried doing some of the missions to start getting the Raiden outfit, but that one's it's been a little trickier because for some reason the training missions don't like the type of parkour that I do. Admittedly, my type of parkour is more like smash through it until I get to where I want to go, but
yeah. I find that Assassin's Creed is a game that I love and almost hate with equal measure, because there's just times when Ezio just doesn't want to do what you want.
Yeah.
You know, he gets on this banister and he gets in this crouch position, and it's like he's like plastered against a wall and will not go through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
jump backwards.
And it's not a problem, you know, that you have to work around it. It's like, motherfucker, this has to happen when I have a time clock clicking, you know, ticking, and I'm trying to get through this.
Exactly.
You know, this doesn't happen when I need to go get health potions and go to the doctor. I don't get stuck on any walls in those cases. And he does random stuff, like, I would try my best to jump off in a direction of a tower to throw my parachute to not land in the hay barrel, and he'll turn a full 90 degrees and jump into the hay barrel. Like, I didn't want the hay barrel, damn it! You know, you'll be running past a a wall or a ladder, and he'll randomly decide to climb it. You know, up he goes. I'm like, no, I was turning. And like, so, you know, well, that's
every once in a while. Those are totally just glitches in the NMS. You don't bother with them.
Yeah, so, but the one thing I kind of, the only downside aside from the tower defense in Revelations was that I couldn't kill with impunity. Mm. I had to watch my awareness meter. Like if I reached full notoriousness, I could not engage the enemy or they would attack one of the dens. There comes a point where the dens become safe, but you have to get there before that's useful, and you're more than halfway through the game by that point. Mm-hmm. And unlike the previous ones, you can't just tear down posters or bribe the dudes or kill the eyewitnesses. You can bribe the dudes or kill the eyewitnesses, except they not every one of them allows that. So like you could be near one of those heralds you can bribe, but he's not bribable for your notoriety because he hasn't triggered yet. But then I have this little funny thing where I bribe one and I run a long loop around the block and come back and I bribe him again because he'll reactivate if you get far enough away from him.
Oh, nice.
So I lose my entire notoriety running around the block. they also don't take as much off this time. But I really love the environments, really love the graphics. The armor was so-so. I think the best armor was in Brotherhood. I think Brotherhood mechanically was the best game.
Mm-hmm.
So... that's about the extent of my full game stuff.
Well, of course, you left out, because you, of course, hate Nintendo, and we understand, the new Zelda game, which I've not played yet, but I have. But I'm waiting until I have a Wii. So I've been trying to avoid spoilers for the past several weeks.
Wait. You have the game, but you don't have the system.
Yeah, it's at home. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. I also have a very quick... Metal Gear Solid related note that apparently just yesterday at the VGAs, Metal Gear Solid Rising was retitled Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Which is the dumbest name ever. I mean, Rising wasn't a great name to begin with, but seriously, what? Metal Gear Rising Revengeance? What?
I don't understand why they would do that. It was a perfectly fine title.
All this says is something that we always knew. Hideo hates Metal Gear, hates Metal Gear fans, and is pissed at us all for making them make more Metal Gear games.
Well, apparently it's actually the development of the game is being taken over by somebody else, apparently.
Yeah.
Platinum Games.
Needless to say, I wasn't too thrilled with the idea of an action-based platformer with a lightning sword where you play as Raiden in Metal Gear universe to begin with. This just continues to bode badly for the series, so I'm kind of throwing my hands up. I'm not even touching it.
Can we just talk for just a moment about the VGAs? I had a friend of mine tell me the other day, he said the VGA awarded Skyrim the game of the year. I was like, that means nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the VGAs in general mean nothing.
That's true.
I can't watch them because I don't have cable. My cable is basically network TV and Netflix. But
ever?
It's
just a popularity contest. And somebody posted somewhere. I mean, the internet is a great place to see people, you know, strutting their ignorance. Like somebody said that Skyrim is nothing compared to Modern Warfare 3.
Oh, God.
Like, I don't know. If you've played all of the Call of Duty series, Modern Warfare 3 is a weaker entry. Mm-hmm. So like I can't even begin to I mean, even when I don't love Skyrim, it's better than Call of Duty. I'm sorry.
That being said, my beef with the VGAs is something that I kind of discovered through Twitter and through my gaming sites. As many of you know, I'm a Star Wars nerd that pretty much rivals Dalkin, and I follow Mark Hamill on Twitter. He and Tara Strong, the voice actress for Harley Quinn and probably one of the single most prolific voice actresses in the U.S. today. Right now, she's popular for My Little Pony, but we won't get into that. apparently the VGAs were so classy and so smart that they decided to put Mark Hamill, this American legend, his seats for the VGAs were in the highest balcony behind a pillar, where even if they – and when because they did – awarded about seven of their awards in 30 seconds in a montage. They didn't even know that their categories, best actor and actress in a game, they didn't even know that they went past until afterwards. So it's like there were so many games that they didn't have chances to actually go up and give their award speeches. They shafted some of the biggest stars that they actually had who were actually game related. And instead, we had to put up with Charlie Sheen on stage and this continuing stereotype that gamers are nothing more than tasteless asshole jocks.
That's sort of what that's the thing is in the general concept, VGA would be nice, but in implementation, it's just not.
It's so bad.
And it's a giant law.
Well, people said
it's hosted by Spike. That says enough, really.
Yeah, right there.
The problem is nobody else can host it. Who else is going to host it? G4? They're Spike 2.0. Like,
yeah.
I have no respect for G4 either. So
yeah, when it was a tech TV, you know, that maybe then. But even then, you know, God, it's amazing how long ago tech TV was.
And we still miss it.
So I just wanted to touch on that because I just want to make sure that we had consensus that VGA equals worthless. Because my friend's like, you know, so what is worth? Yep. I'm like, well, I don't have an alternative. I'm just saying, like, you know, and I don't disagree that Skyrim might be the game of the year, but I'm just saying VGA doesn't get to say that.
No. I take general consensus of various websites and publications, and there's usually like two or three games that I consider games of the year because.
Well, I think also VGA is more of a popularity contest.
It's a popularity contest, and it's an excuse for.
Do they talk about anything that's like, you know, indie? You know, do they talk about Minecraft? Okay, well, I think Minecraft is becoming such a big thing, but you know,
I almost don't count Minecraft as indie anymore because of how huge it is.
Yeah,
using straight numbers, I mean, they should have talked about Farmville last year. I'm sure they didn't. Exactly. So you know, but in any case, you know, talking about popularity, the biggest MMO we know of, World of Warcraft, has a new expansion coming out, The Mists of Pandaria.
Dun, dun, dun,
right. I want to ask a huge question that's going to offend a lot of you. And then my question is this, who cares?
I don't even think the WoW people care.
No, I find WoW incredibly irrelevant these days. Like, this game is like 5 or 6 years old.
And 7, actually.
Is it
well,
really?
They were talking about 10 years of Warcraft.
Yeah, but World of Warcraft itself is 7 years old.
It's really weird because, like, Burning Crusade didn't get a whole lot of hype, at least that I remember, when it first came out. But then you had Wrath of the Lich King, which was huge because it wrapped up the Lich King storyline from Warcraft 3, Frozen Throne. And then you had Cataclysm, which completely rebuilt Warcraft from the ground up. And I remember the hype from these two releases as being insane. And then you get this one, Pandaria, and it's an overwhelming mess.
Well, it sounds lazy. I mean,
it sounds lazy, but you can also
race.
You can also
one new
tell
race
that
is for both sides of the factions.
Yeah,
you know,
it's overwhelming, honey badger.
I think
go
ahead.
My main beef is just the fact that this game is, like, so old. And it's like, I know that they rebuilt it all in the last expansion, but, like, seriously, this game is kind of irrelevant right now.
Well, it's like I understand your perspective, but irrelevant is really leaping because, you know, even though they've been losing subscribers, they still have, you know, umpteen million people paying every month. So it's still up there.
I'll tell you the moment where, like, I kind of lost all my respect for WoW. There were two things that did it. Number one, they started, you know, they went free to play, or they pretended they were free to play, you know, with really just till level whatever.
Yeah, and, like level 20, they cut you off.
But instead of being honest, on literally every website I went to, I would see the big ad with, like, the little gnome guy doing, like, the pelvic thrust in my face with the big, huge letters flying into my face, free is good. And, like, literally every website I went to, and I'm like, this is getting out of control. I can't stand it. And then they did the Chuck Norris ad, and I just was like, that's
it. Come on. I love the Chuck Norris ad.
Okay, I thought you actually had good points here. The point that I started really getting annoyed is the fact that they allow you to pay for stuff with real money for in-game items. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about, I don't understand why they charge money for the transfer, you know, if you want to change realms, you know.
Cash stores in games like League of Legends, where it's done well and it's a fully free game to begin with, that makes sense. Cash stores in a game where I'm paying $12 a month to play a game anyway, cents less made.
Everybody's trying to ride the microtransactions train now. So.
And it's sort of like, you know, it has a similar problem with, like I had with Modern Warfare when I first started playing, is that the people higher up with all the unlocks had such an unbelievable advantage over the people who didn't have the unlocks. Mm-hmm. If you have leveled a tune to a certain level, when you this is the Lich King thing, when you get somebody to the North Rend, they can get their flight thingamabob right away.
Mm-hmm. I was like, well, no, you can't get it right away.
Yeah, you can. You can get it at level 70 if you're in Northrend.
I thought it was 77. Did they? They probably changed.
No. I'm saying if you have one tune already leveled up, you can do something so that one of your alternate tunes, when they arrive in Northrend, can immediately get the flight.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, sorry.
Okay, and, like, I gotta say this. I know it sounded like what I was saying was irrelevant, but the reason this bothers me is just because the way it looks like they're doing their publicity now, it just looks, like, really desperate. And it just, it, you know, I used to have a lot of respect for them because they built this huge franchise, like, you know, from really not that much.
I really don't think it's so much desperate at this point, but I really get the feeling that Blizzard has decided, okay, World of Warcraft made us our money, but we're done with it and we're moving on. And you can really tell that because they have two major projects that are both probably coming out next year, and that's StarCraft II, Heart of the Swarm, and Diablo III. Both are getting this really huge Blizzard push right now. I know Diablo 3 released a new trailer last night, but there's
those are their other two big franchises anyway.
This is where the money's coming from.
Plus they are supposedly working on an unnamed MMO. So.
Which sounds exciting, but I've heard it's supposedly a new IP, but it sounds like it's going to be a sci-fi MMO. So it's basically going to be World of StarCraft and everything about it.
That would be really funny.
So I hear Eric being really excited, so let me just shrivel him a little bit. We're going to talk about the Old Republic now.
I want to kind of hear Eric's viewpoint on this and why he's not ecstatic.
I am a massively huge Star Wars fan, for those of you who haven't heard the last 5 years of podcasting I've done. Mm-hmm. When this was first announced, I was kind of like, okay, this sounds kind of cool. We're getting KOTOR 3, right? No? We're not getting KOTOR. Oh, okay, cool, but this will be exciting. Sweet, the beta's coming out. It's World of Warcraft with lightsabers. Okay, cool. Okay,
I disagree with you on that. This is in no way World of Warcraft with lightsabers.
Well, it kind of is in some ways.
It kind of is.
Go ahead.
I mean, you've got the same kind of chat window in the bottom left. You've got this, you know, the talent trees. All the formula items are there. Some of the execution is better.
I think I would really like it, but the only reason I would want to play this is purely for story reasons, which it is BioWare, and I still trust them there, and I think BioWare could tell a really good MMO Star Wars story. Everything else about it is just like been there, done that, and that's why I have very little faith in the Old Republic these days.
But honestly, can you think of them going any other direction? I mean,
Guild Wars
2. What's so wrong with them? Okay, Guild Wars 2, they're trying something new. Kudos to them. But remember, I think with Old Republic, I think it was rather smart of them to use elements that already work.
I understand that perspective, but then look at WoW. It's losing subscribers, so maybe it isn't working.
WoW is running out of steam for a lot of other various reasons,
having been in the beta with David, although I didn't advance to the level he did, I think I hit 10 and I just... Once you hit Coruscant, that was where I ended up at.
Oh, that's a spoiler.
I was kind of like, this place is massive. Take any town that you go to in WoW and multiply it times 40. I'm like, this thing is huge. And I was like, where do I go? And why do I want to go there? And do I need any of this stuff? And after a while, to me, that's where the massive time sink that MMOs are start to hit me in the face and go, stupid, you could be playing Assassin's Creed. I'm like, yes, you're right, I could be.
Some people like
huge. I really wasn't so confused about where to go or what I needed to do.
It's not that I couldn't have picked up a bunch of quests and started forming a basis, just I didn't feel any compulsion to do so. And that's where it's different, like with, like, you know, Mass Effect. When you arrive at the Citadel, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this, and as you go along, you pick up at the quest. But the place, as big as it looks, isn't as big as it could be.
Mm-hmm. And in both Mass Effects, the Citadel is surprisingly small and surprisingly easy to navigate.
Oh, they're actually going to... Supposedly Mass Effect 3 is getting a piece of the Citadel that was meant for 2, which is going to be much bigger than...
Which I heard. I'm okay with that, because admittedly, the Citadel in 2, I wanted to see more of it, especially once we got into some of the...
I kind of wanted to go back to my old stomping grounds, you know, just because...
Yeah, I was a little disappointed about that. I was looking forward to... Because, like, actually, that's one of the things I noticed about Mass Effect 2 is that, like, Mass Effect 1, like, you're basically allowed to explore everything. And in Mass Effect 2, they spend a lot of time, like, cutting out the fat as much as possible, which I guess I'm okay with, but there's certain elements of just, like, you know.
I feel like 2 was more content heavy, even though it felt more limited.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like there's a lot more to 2. But anyway, back to Tor. David surprisingly wasn't a Jedi, or at least he wasn't a Jedi in the tune that I saw.
Yeah, I played a little bit of the Consular on the first beta weekend that I got in, and it was interesting. You're basically Jedi Librarian as a Consular. It's kind of...
I thought they were the healers. Was that wrong?
I meant storyline-wise.
Oh, okay.
But as far as that goes, actually, the classes are surprisingly versatile. You have at least 2 or 3 classes where if you pick the right advanced class and the right... branch of the advanced class, you can be pretty much what, you know, DPS, tank, or healer, depending on which advanced class you pick.
Which is sort of like the Paladin from WoW.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it's for every class.
Yeah, so...
And,
to some extent, I mean, you can see the parallels of the WoW and the Star Wars world, which I think is kind of necessary. I mean, certain things have to be there. The place where I wonder if they're gonna pull it off is because WoW really has a lot of random stuff in there that I don't know if Tor is going to be open to. As an example, if you're familiar with the movie The Dark Crystal, they had the Skeksis in there. In WoW, they have a race of bird-like people, almost the exact same thing, called the Skeddies. Like spaghettis. they have other things. I mean, there's more than I can think of to drop in, but there's like
there's a lot of
a robot called Ed 210, which is a takeoff of Ed 209 for RoboCop. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if all those cultural references are possible in Tor, you know, but on the flip side, this, everything being audible where everyone talks, although I turn on subtitles, so I can more quickly go through that. They have the chat system works kind of like, Mass Effect, except your mouse doesn't spin the pointer. I thought that was kind of strange because it looked just like it, except for that factor.
Yeah, but I think it works better since, you know, you just put your cursor over the chat choice that you want to click.
Yeah.
So you don't have like that weird, like if the cursor decides to fly off the screen, you don't accidentally pick the wrong option or whatever.
Yeah. Well, the spinny bit was for, you know, controllers, obviously.
Yeah, so it obviously works a lot better for PC the way that they have it set up, and I really like the story progression in Tor. It feels very much like playing something like Mass Effect or one of the original KOTORs, but a little bit more.
When you
polished.
Have to run everywhere, the first and then, you know, starting area, it seems things are just spaced out enough where it's not as annoying, but once I got the Coruscant and it's like I'm looking for the person who unlocks my talent tree, which turns out wasn't on Coruscant.
Oh boy.
But they give you that quest right when you get onto the space station if you're actually paying attention.
I didn't get the quest, and as our conversations have revealed, David, you had the same problem. So.
No, I as I told you before, what was with one of my secondary characters, which on my first character, I had already gone through and done that quest. It didn't matter. The second character, I just didn't care. I was more focused on getting through the main storyline.
Yeah, either way, it should just unlock when you hit a certain level. It shouldn't have to be a quest.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's going to be a quest, it's like they have quests that are marked important with a little green dot.
It isn't necessarily a quest. You can just go and get your skills without having to get the quest. The quest just is there to teach you how to get the skills.
I could not open up the talent tree until I did that quest. Absolutely could not do it. The button was grayed out, wouldn't let me touch it. So the quest was required. And if the request was required, it should be marked required. So I didn't get a chance to send the feedback.
Okay.
So they never asked, so I didn't get to, you know, say hey. But one of my friends said he was going to hold off for about a month to get it, and now he's already pre-ordered it, so he's like sinking in. But from what I heard of Battlefield 3, anytime the EA does a multiplayer release, I bet you Tor is going to roll out a little rocky because they just don't seem to understand how many people are going to hit their multiplayer servers when things go live.
And I'm sure the their new continuing failure of a rollout that is Origin isn't helping things.
Thankfully, Origin and Tor are separated. Separate. So you need you need an Origin account to sign in, but you won't need the Origin application to play the game.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I thought that they were one and the same. I wasn't able to play the beta. I was busy on the...
No, everything...
I believe that was the initial plan, but so after what? Enough people made yeah. uproar over it, they decided that it would be better to not have them interlocked.
But if you have an EA login of any sort, EA.com, social.bioware, Origin, it's all the same now. They've merged all the databases. So
speaking of Origin.
Yeah, speaking of Origin, they're moving on to try to compete more so with Steam by adding Warner Brothers, Capcom, and THQ to their library. Those three publishers, you know, all they see is dollar symbols. They're just like, you know, a chance to widen their audience. Mm-hmm. Given Steam's overlay, their community features, their store, their sales, I don't see Origin holding a candle to that on any level and not being even nearly as polished. People say that Origin is a little rough and so was Steam when it came out. I'm like, yes, but you're not competing against Steam when it came out. You're competing against Steam now.
Yeah.
And these are all lessons that Steam learned 7-8 years ago. These are things that EA should have looked at and said, how do we avoid the mistakes that Valve made? And it seems like they've completely forgotten to do that.
They've just, it seems like to me they just totally ignored that and are like, oh, we'll do fine.
And I think the recurrent theme here is there anything EA is not jealous of? Battlefield 3 in response to Call of Duty, Tor in response to WoW, Origin in response to Steam. I was like, is there any slice of a pie that they don't want for themselves? So, I don't know.
EA is having problems trying to find their own niche, and they've always been that way as a publisher. If you look back at their library, they've always been all over the map. And even Ubisoft is kind of carving their own even Ubisoft has carved their own corner. They've got Assassin's Creed, they've got Prince of Persia. Basically, Ubisoft these days is the action adventure third person games. Splinter Cell, Assassin's Creed, Prince of Persia. That is Ubisoft's niche. Steam is multiplayer and first person shooters and really quirky characters. Team Fortress, Left 4 Dead, Portal. EA is just kind of trying to be everything at once and failing at it all. And
well, they also buy a lot of companies and then run them into the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, the last half of the Sims 2 expansions and now Sims 3, the guy who made Sims is not involved at all.
Yeah, Maxis Games doesn't exist really anymore. And
yeah, Maxis doesn't exist.
Spore was the start of the end there. I mean, I was a sucker who bought Spore when it came out, and I enjoyed it. And then I got Sins of a Solar Empire and said, screw Spore. I really haven't played it since.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got Spore and I played it up to the space part and then like, okay, bored now.
Mm-hmm. See, it never appealed to me on any level, which, you know, and I asked my sister who played Sims rather devoutly. She's like, that's nothing like the games I enjoy. And what she spent all her time doing was like rearranging furniture and new textures and new...
Oh, designing.
3D. Yeah, so, you know, to her it was like the dollhouse with the side off, you know,
whereas I was hoping
to me it would be the opportunity to torture artificial characters, which I would probably do.
Well, don't worry, you can do plenty
you
of that.
You would, John.
I don't know. There's probably not a lot to be said, except that Origin is trying really hard and failing to draw my attention. I am aware that they're there, but they don't appeal to me on any level just because I don't want another program on my computer. I mean, I have to put up with games for Windows Live on Batman and Bioshock 2 and any other games I am unlucky enough to end up buying that they have it in there. I have to put up with the DRM launcher for Ubisoft, which they have left it there, but it doesn't require persistent online connection, which is nice. So they've actually, you know, seen the light, so they can have a little launcher there. I don't mind that, so long as it doesn't get in my way when I'm trying to play the game, because they had internet outages when Assassin's Creed 2 came out, and when the internet went out, the game would save locally but not kick you out. But if you left the game, you couldn't go back until the online connection resumed. Whereas games for Windows Live, if they lose the connection, you're out of the game, no save, no chance to do anything. Too bad. Which most games today have really numerous checkpoint saves, which save you a lot of drama with that.
There's me who saves like an obsessive person. Unless, of course, you get one of those games that doesn't let you save manually.
Yeah. I played Max Payne 2. Somebody bought it for me for my birthday because it was on my wish list. And Sometimes older games that you've played, you have like a happier memory of them than what they really are. Mm-hmm. You play an older game, and the slow-mo stuff is cool, but the game is very primitive by today's standards. And I died at one point, and then I was like, oh my god, like, I didn't save, and I've just lost, like, all the progress played into this game. And I guess KOTOR is like that as well. I remember KOTOR because I use F5 for save and F9 for load, and it's by default F4 for save and F5 for load. Mm-hmm. And so the first time I hit F5, it loads the autosave waypoint, which is the beginning of the level, and I was saving just before the end point, which means I just lost the whole level. Mm. Yeah, I don't. I mean, almost every game has been F5, F6 for save, and F9 for load. I don't know why they changed it, but in any case, you know, some of these older games will rake you across the coals, you know, if you're used to today's games, how much they pamper you. Mm-hmm. So talking about pampering, the underworked Shigeru Miyamoto said he was going to retire from Nintendo, and then he said he's not going to, except the truth is kind of in the middle there.
Mm. I mean, what really happened is it sounded like he mentioned to somebody that like one of the he keeps saying to his employees, you know, I'm going to be retiring someday. And he's trying to get them to understand that like they need to work without him. And then it sounds like somebody picked that up and it's like, oh, he's leaving. And then, you know, made a big deal about it. And then it turned out it wasn't actually a big deal. But I think
what's happening here is Miyamoto's trying to be smart and set up a Apple-like succession plan where he's trying to set everybody up. It's like, yeah, I'm not immortal. I'm going to be retiring at some point because I want to, you know, have a life.
Yeah.
And somebody needs to get... somebody needs to be able to step in for me. And I don't think anybody else has been able to fill that role. It certainly ain't Reggie, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it sounded like the takeaway is that he is minimizing his role in Nintendo at this point.
Yeah.
Working on smaller projects and what have you, which, you know,
maybe he'll finally get that new Pikmin game out.
Yeah, as you know, I couldn't give a flying fuck about Nintendo, but,
you bastard.
I mean, it isn't because I don't hate Nintendo, like you said. I feel like, you know, I'm tired of the regurgitation. It's just like, you know,
paying attention.
Yeah. After the how many Zelda games, how many Mario this, Mario Kart that. Just it's like,
watch what you say about Zelda, buddy.
Yeah.
Why can't we have a new franchise? I mean, like, I think that's where Final Fantasy has petered out because they wanted to go in new directions, but they still want to call it Final Fantasy, which is the problem. Mm-hmm. People want a Final Fantasy like experience and you're not giving it to them. You know, I know that's not Nintendo, but I'm just saying as an example of the continuous regurgitation. Like,
and at least the Final Fantasy studio has done that. You know, they have the Final Fantasy, but they also branched out. They did, you know, Kingdom Hearts and what is the no one... something, you know, all those other Enix series that they've created that have all been.
Of course, Kingdom Hearts was basically Disney Final Fantasy.
Well, exactly.
But more than just name.
Yeah.
But the difference is it worked and it did spawn.
It was very good. I'm definitely not arguing against that. I loved Kingdom Hearts and Kingdom Hearts 2. There's
and
no
go figure. The next Kingdom Hearts game is going to involve a big crossover with The World Ends With You. So.
What?
You know, a little bit of inbreeding going
on
there.
You didn't know that?
I did not know this.
Yeah, they're putting
Neku.
What's his name?
I think
Neku. Yeah, right. In the
Sorry.
Game.
I spawned this tangent, and we're off on Shigeru Miyamoto.
Yes. So. Anyway, back to this game system that made Final Fantasy what it was.
So we're trying to move, I think, in a more general Japanese developer direction. So that gives us the perfect opportunity to talk about the Ico creator leaves Sony. Mm-hmm. And he's staying with Team Ico to finish off the contract on The Last Guardian. There's another company, and I don't know the name off the top of my head. It's the company behind Resistance. They're doing their last PlayStation exclusive game.
I think that's Insomniac. Don't quote me on that, yes. Though.
I don't know what the takeaway here is with the Ico creator. It sounds like there's some kind of problem with Sony, but we don't know what it is as of yet, so I can't even begin to guess what it is. Mm-hmm. But my thought is that the first party Sony titles aren't doing as well as these developers were expecting, and it's simply because no matter how you slice it, Sony just doesn't have a majority of the market. I mean, they're doing great, but most of the reason people buy the PlayStation 3 over the Xbox isn't because of the games. It's because it does other things outside of the games. So I know that the Last Guardian was announced. That was one of the reasons I got a PlayStation. Last Guardian, Uncharted 2 looked like really promising titles, and I thought, well, most everything else I play is also available for the PlayStation, so maybe I'll be happy with the PlayStation instead of an Xbox. Push come to shove, all I've ever bought is Uncharted because Last Guardian never came out.
Mm-hmm.
And the news has been decreasing, which also speaks of some kind of problem. No one's saying what the problem is, which, I don't know, that's kind of good, it's kind of bad. Like, you know, Rockstar, you know, there was nothing under development until suddenly Grand Theft Auto 5 is coming out, you know.
Yeah.
I like the company that can keep that under wraps, you know, and they don't have any lead designer folks like, you know, Shigeru Miyamoto or whatever, you know, our Rockstar is leaving. None of that, you know, their studios are kind of a cohesive whole is the way they sort of broadcast their information. I kind of like that idea, you know, because that way you don't get, if one person leaves who may be considered to be a key role, you don't get scared mm-hmm. of the future of the franchise. So I don't know. Is anyone else besides me looking forward to The Last Guardian?
I am. Oh, mostly because
I am dying to get my hands on that game.
Again, it's part of the me not being a console gamer until just a couple of months ago, but I'm really looking forward to it. I really want to get the Ico Shadow of the Colossus Act HD collection and catch up on some of these big console exclusive titles I've missed over the last 7 to 10 years. And Last Guardian looked promising back then. I was kind of excited about it back then, said, man, maybe I'll pick a PS3 someday. Now I have it. Now it's time for them to pony up their half of it.
They have to hold out. You were going to give me Last Guardian, and now that I have a PS3, now you have to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that worked for me back in 2009. It didn't, though. So a point that I think is pretty salient is I think that the UI in the PlayStation is easier to use than the Xbox, which takes us to our next point, the Xbox 360 fall update, which is kind of a misnomer because it happened in December. I hate this update, and I guess I'm getting old and crotchety where I'm just like, I don't like change. But I understand when change is improves functionality. Sort of like I still see people on their XP and Vista boxes setting their start menu to the single tier because the dual tier scares them. Mm-hmm. Well, in Windows 7, you don't get the choice. You mm-hmm. just dual tiered or turn your computer off.
Mm-hmm.
With Microsoft has hit the cell phone, smartphone industry with their Windows Phone operating system, which is it's almost like the Play School My First Smartphone is what it looks like. It just looks really dumb.
It's simplified, it's dumb, and it really seems to scream to the user and to anybody looking at the user, hey, I don't know how to use my phone. I need something stupid to tell me like, that this is what to do.
It's stupid paperclip all over again.
if you have a moment, look up the Jitterbug phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that. It's got like the big red button that says, you know, end. And the big green button says answer.
Yeah.
It's got really big buttons with no letters on it because it doesn't do texting.
Mm-hmm.
And when you open it up, it's a flip phone. When you open it up, it actually has a dial tone, even though there is no dial tone per se. It actually does that to make old folks think it's a regular phone, even though it's
a cell
phone.
Hilarious and adorable.
My grandparents had a Jitterbug, and it's for people who aren't that tech handy, it was really nice for them. The problem is Microsoft is now assuming that the majority of its user base is 70 years old.
Yeah, see, this is the problem. Yeah. This is like, you know, one of the problems I run with my customers, because I do tech support customer service every day, is AOL idiots who don't understand the web because AOL has watered it down for them for so long. And this mm-hmm. is where this is what the big push towards tablets. This is the big thing with Windows Phone. What they're trying to do is make things really simple, except they're not. It's just a layer. It's Microsoft Bob all over again. This UI to go on top of the actual operating system to look simpler, but it isn't. Because push comes to shove, at some point you're going to have to dig into those meaty internals, which you can't get to with the stupid overlay.
Mm-hmm.
So Microsoft, bolstered by the fact that Windows Phone has not taken the world by storm, has decided that everything is going to have this. It's called the Metro UI. It's going to be in Windows 8. It's going to be. It is now in the Xbox Fall update.
This stupid UI.
It is not good.
It's like trying to simplify things by saying, "Here, put on an oven mitt. Now you only have one finger. It's simpler."
Yeah,
because
see,
the thing about the Fall update is, like, because they already, like, what, half a year ago released a, you know, an update that sort of did that kind of simplification thing that, you know, they were talking about with
but that was
UI. So they've already released another one that makes it even more dumbed down?
What you're thinking about is what they did when you got a Kinect, when you install the Kinect software, it changed the UI to be Kinectified.
Well, no, they completely changed the UI regardless of whether you not had a Kinect. It was the Kinect update. But it was like their sort of Xbox 2.0.
No, it's only present if you have a Kinect fired up.
No, but it changed the UI from what it was and all the sound.
I have two Xboxes, one with the Kinect, one without, and I'm telling you, it's only present if the Kinect is fired up. All
right, well, there must be a different change that they made then. But
there was the NXE that came out in 2008, which is the one that they've been using, you know, to this day. And I think, to me, that the crossbar interface is perfect. It's just like in the PlayStation. You want to look at the videos, you move to the PlayStation category, and then you've got your roll of options.
Yeah.
Very simple, and even the PlayStation kind of fucks it up because when you get to like the settings aren't in alphabetical order, or maybe they are in alphabetical order if they're written in Japanese. I don't know, but either way, when you get there, it's like, you know, where's the display options? Because it's not at the top, and you're going through the listing like, where's it at? Where's it at? So there's stupidity there as well, but the NXE kind of made sense, except it by default comes to the quote-unquote what's new tab. Like, I just wanted to pop up to the this is my game tab, and I might want to launch my game, which the PlayStation does as well. When you fire it up, it goes to the game tab, and the game disc that's in the drive is the one selected, and you just if you fire it up and you hit X and you're in your game. but the new Metro UI 360 update has these clusters of icons, and they're more colorful than Windows Phone. They're not as simple as Windows Phone. But there, as example, if you want to go to your videos and play a video off your computer through your Xbox, we're talking from the main screen, we're talking about 10 steps to get there. And whereas with the NXE Xbox, you just scroll over to videos and hit enter, and there it is. You pick your computer and get your video. So I don't know. This isn't an improvement unless the gesture Kinect stuff is really going to be an important part of your life, which case I really think they're overestimating the usefulness of Kinect. That's my opinion. I mean, I don't know that that's...
Just your opinion, but it's right.
The technology behind Kinect is really, really cool. Its actual physical real-world application is more or less non-existent.
You know where I think Kinect is the most interesting is the Kinect PC drivers where people can actually play with it on their computer. I think that's more interesting. And I think gesture-based interface control is useful, but the whole, like, you put your hand up and it sees your hand and it puts a hand on the screen, that's not what I mean.
Yeah, they...
You know, if I flip a hand across, you know, my face to show, like, I want you to flip the page, and it flips to the next screen, that's what I want. I don't want to see myself mirrored on screen, because the latency between you moving and it actually responding just makes you feel all the more stupid that they even try to do this.
Which continually makes me think that Star Wars Kinect is going to be one of the worst Star Wars games ever released, which, considering Star Wars' recent track record, tour notwithstanding,
So now we move, we're skipping this, in this podcast, we're skipping the what are you playing lately, because this is going to be my favorite topic and probably your favorite topic of this podcast, Jonathan's random topic. And I'm going to pick you one by one because that's the way I roll.
Oh my God.
So we're going to start with Chad.
I knew you were going to do that.
Well, alphabetically, you're first. Sorry. So the random topic for this podcast is your favorite franchise and why.
Oh, like, this is a hard one.
Yeah, you can't.
I figure hands down you'd be Zelda or Kingdom Hearts.
It's a cross between those two. I'm gonna say Zelda.
Okay.
If only because it's Zelda. I get to run around with a big giant sword, talk to fairies, fight demon like human beings.
So what's your takeaway on Skyward Sword? Are you disappointed it's not HD?
No, I don't have Skyward Sword yet. I can't really make a judgment about it. But I'm not disappointed that it's not HD because It's Nintendo, and yeah.
Weren't they going to release a HD release of it for the Wii
U? Cartoon isn't in HD. It's kind of like there's not a whole lot more detail you're going to gain there.
I guess to some extent that's true.
I mean, I don't
know nothing about them.
The art style they decided to go with Skyward Sword, but if it's any kind of trend with Zelda, I mean, from what I've seen from the trailers, it's a little bit better than
Wind Waker.
Yes, yeah, Wind Waker. Yeah. That's what I was thinking of. But
there you go.
But
David will not be picking Zelda as his favorite.
No.
What I like is that it doesn't go full Wind Waker, but you know, it also, like, one of the things I think they realized with Twilight Princess is that they can't, like, with this technology, with the Wii, whatever the engines are using right now, just can't really do the realistic thing. It's just not really an option for them. So I like what they did is they scaled it back, made it more cartoony, but they didn't go all the way. They just sort of, but that gave them
the kind of combined
awesome use of color, really. And I've seen that they're really exploring that. And it looks nice.
Yeah, well, I definitely don't have anything against the game that has a stylized art style. You know, I'm not one of those people that has to have everything that's super realistic, and if it isn't, the graphics suck, man.
Oh, it's cool. This is a baby game, man. Oh.
I hate reading comments by people who say, I'm not playing it just because it's not in high definition. It's like, talk about a shallow, judgmental viewpoint.
It depends. I mean, if you're coming from like this generation of consoles, which has been around since 2005, if you've had an Xbox, we're talking about, you know, 6 years plus of being in an HD-only world, which is why, you know, for some people, the Wii is kind of a step backwards. Their reasons for saying so are, of course, a bit childish, but which says to me that, you know, once you get to a certain point, it's hard to go back. I mean, it's just like when you play a game that's been refined over its predecessor, and you go back to play the predecessor, like, oh, like, I need that insta-kill thing, or I need this other game mechanic that I now don't have, and it's
you know,
that's why
you're always
going
to go back to something like that and go, this just isn't as good for such reason.
When the GameCube came out, I remember, actually, this actually relates to Zelda. I had played through Wind Waker. And then I decided to go back and play Ocarina of Time because I hadn't played it in a while. And I remember going back saying, why is this so choppy? Because, you know, when they improve the frame rates and everything, you get used to that. And then you go back and you think, oh, man, this kind of lost its appeal a little bit. I mean, it's not like you wanted it to, but...
Yeah, so I still think that thing, an older game can like grow more gold in your memory than it is when you finally play it again later on.
I mean, which I just see the viewpoint, I mean,
having happy memories, but there are people who go back and play these older games, you know, with these simpler mechanics, and they think that, you know, this is the way it should be. Like, I have a friend who thinks, like, Ms. Pac-Man is, like, the heyday of video gaming, and today's games are just fluff and frosting on top of the good stuff that you used to play. I'm like, I don't know what you're smoking.
Well, I'd agree with him a little bit, as today's video games are not as challenging as they were 6 years ago. Maybe.
We
but
know why that
that's
is.
More so. Yeah.
That's because they want to appeal to a wider audience.
They
and
do.
To wit, like when you play a game that is just like throws your face into the ground and then grinds it into the sand, you're just kind of like, oh man,
hello,
this
Dark
is harsh. So moving forward, David, favorite franchise and why?
You have to ask a hard question.
Essay question, 5-page minimum.
Don't bring school into this.
Does it have to be a game franchise, or can it be like any franchise in general?
I was aiming for game, but you can pick.
Well, I'll stick with game then. But obviously, I think the franchise I'm sticking with right now is Tor, but I'm kind of iffy to go into that since it's so new at this point.
Because you haven't played the release code yet.
Right, and it's just kind of... You know, I've played 2 beta weekends. It's not really a whole lot to go off of, so...
I thought you played 3.
No, just 2.
Oh.
There was a third one that was that I talked to you about, but I didn't get into that one.
Oh, because you said to me something about, like, the last beta weekend you played in. I thought that was, like, a weekend after I played.
No. There was the first one that I played, and then the last one that I played, which was the one that I played that you were in.
Well, if that's your focus right now, you know, stick with it and say what you like so far.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's like I mentioned before. I really like the story progression, everything about it. It's very much like playing an MMO version of, say, Mass Effect. You know, the story is engaging. I love the multiplayer conversations. Those are fantastic. For example, when a group I was with went onto the Essilis, and spoiler alert.
You always have to spoil things.
It's a space game. You have to get on a ship to travel between planets. Spoilers.
But this is something that was in one of the media releases they showed. You have to go into part of this Flashpoint where...
Flashpoint is a dungeon.
Yes, Flashpoint is basically, it's a dungeon, it's a group dungeon. And you have to make a decision where basically you can either essentially flush all the engineers out of the engineering compartment out into space so that you can get to the bridge faster... Or you can take the little bit longer route and manually set all of the conduits.
John, we all know you'd be a Sith. You can't be good. It's impossible.
And so,
shockingly enough, I did roll Sith.
This being a Republic Flashpoint, you're all technically "quote unquote" good guys, but just because you're Republic or Empire doesn't mean you actually necessarily have to be light side or dark side. So you do have. Yeah.
Sabers out there.
Yeah, so you do have the opportunity to, you know, do the good thing or the bad thing, even though, you know, regardless of if you're a quote-unquote good guy or quote-unquote bad guy. Moving on, so you're in this multiplayer conversation, and this is, you know, a turning point during the Flashpoint where only one person gets to talk, but everyone picks their choice, and then basically, the game then rolls the dice for everybody. Whoever gets the highest roll actually does the speaking point in the conversation, and their choice is what turns the story for the Flashpoint. In the case of my group, everybody picked the light side choice because we all thought that flushing out the engineers out into space was horrible and evil, although I was actually rather surprised since one of my group members is one of those type of people like John, who really loves doing the evil stuff. Well,
but sometimes you get what I like to call RPG guilt, because the game will sometimes make you have to live with a decision that you make that happens to be bad. But on the flip side, even though we're the quote-unquote Alliance good guys, I'm kind of like using my little Star Trek quote, like, the needs of the many far outweigh the needs of the few, and you are the few. Bye-bye.
Well, that's kind of the choice that it is right there, too, is it is that kind of thing where... Well, you know, the choices aren't always necessarily, you know, clear cut.
The only thing that would have ruined that, like my ability to, like, you know, kill them, would have been like if, like, it was like a Scotty like chief engineer is like, good luck getting the warp field back up after I'm gone.
But I did enjoy
the story stuff.
But yes, I enjoyed the story stuff. I also like that they encourage exploration. They have like these little, like holocron things, or they call them datacrons, out in various exploration areas. And the thing is that some of these are like in places where the terrain is so difficult to navigate, you think you're just playing out, you know, not supposed to be able to get up there. So it's like a reward for, you know, trying to get to places where you don't think you're supposed to be able to get to.
Or you're being a glitcher.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And, another nice thing, too, is that most of the quest progression does place all your quests in a certain area. So when you get a series of quests, some of them are, like, on your way out there, but they're all in the same general area, and then you go back and then get your next battery of quests, and they're in a different area, but they're all in the same area as each other again. So you're not, like, taking 6 hours to just do one round of quests, because they're, you know, all over the freaking map. You're actually, like, making a logical kind of progression there. And I really like that.
I did notice also, in the areas where you have enemies you would worry about aggroing, which is an MMO term that maybe not everyone knows. It means that you've come too close to a character and it's decided it needs to, like, you know, mess your world up.
Eat you. Yeah, pretty much.
So I've noticed in Tor that the aggro range is larger, so you can actually avoid a lot of nonsense if you want to. I don't want to spoil it, but when you go between one waypoint and another in the starting area, if you serpentine between the enemies, you can actually avoid aggro all the way there.
Yeah.
which you may or may not want to do because you want to level.
It's really fun and engaging, too.
Yeah, it depends. Once I got my little jump attack, I was a little happier because I can do the instant smack them for 65% of their health right off the bat.
Yeah.
Worked for me.
Yeah, it definitely gets a lot better after it, because when you start out with, like, just your one ability, it's a little bit eh, but you get a lot more abilities really quickly.
What's kind of funny is, like,
level 5 and up.
I wonder if they keep them throughout the entire level progression, because I know there's that one spell in WoW that I never, ever stopped using as a druid. And I wonder if that was the same case for, you know, some of the stuff that you're going
to
end up with.
It seems like to me that very first ability you get, which, like, doesn't use any ability points, like, that's your standby ability, where if you run out of combo points or energy or, you know, whatever your class's resources, kind of like WoW, different classes have different resource
mana,
types. Like
rage,
some of some of them build.
Is there a mana? Because as far as I can tell, then it never runs out.
Well,
it can run out
if you
don't
use it
right.
Was that?
You were a Jedi Knight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they have a rage type resource where they build it up, and then once they have enough quote unquote like combo points, then they.
Oh, so they're a warrior.
Yeah. And then.
So I have a silly thing that I like.
Have a force bar, which is basically like a mana bar.
Okay, so it isn't. I thought that there just wasn't mana. I guess I was mistaken.
Yeah, and then again, like troopers have like an ammo bar, which is kind of like basically it's like a mana bar, but the more ammo you have, the faster you regenerate, even in combat. So
you regenerate ammo.
Yeah,
you regenerate. Borderlands.
So
there's a thing you do. It's one of the buffs. I just sent a picture of it. It's the old Star Wars poster with Luke holding his lightsaber straight up, and the buff on the Jedi Knight does that. He holds it up and it does like a He-Man I have the power thing, which
yeah,
I thought
it's
actually
totally that Star Wars poster pose, like A New Hope pose.
Yeah, he literally puts his lightsaber up and like this like little starburst pops out of it, and like and then you like have this little glow for a minute and then the buff
like
is active.
It's the A New Hope poster pose.
So so anyway, moving forward, Eric,
yes.
Favorite franchise?
I would say League of Legends, but one game does not a franchise make. Therefore, I'm going to probably have to fall back and go with Assassin's Creed these days.
Oh my god.
The games are massive amounts of fun. The best part of it, and I still can't quite figure out how they pulled this off, is the overarching storyline is so incredibly stupid. And yet, I'm still completely pulled in by this.
The idea that we can see our past and our DNA.
Mm-hmm. It's like all these, like, they throw more fake tech at you.
Wait a minute. You're saying that's not true?
Hi, Jonathan. There's a couple things you should learn. That being said, the thing that really pulls me in is I love the open world gameplay. And it's one of the few game franchises you can very much tell looked at all the mistakes they made in the first game, because the first game was kind of a unique situation in that Ubisoft threw out two great franchises, or what should have been the start of two great franchises at the same time. And you had Assassin's Creed and you had Mirror's Edge. And in my opinion, Mirror's Edge was by far the better game, but Assassin's Creed 1 had the better long-term possibilities. And you saw that play out once you hit 2.
It also gave you more gameplay.
It did give you more gameplay.
I think part of the problem with Assassin's Creed 1 was they were cultivating the tech more than they were actually cultivating the game, which is where the game kind of felt kind of like this limited formula. And they tried to pad it.
Mirror's Edge kind of did the same thing, though.
They were both tech demo games, and yeah, well, I'm going to be the first to admit that.
Well, Mirror's Edge was also using Unreal Engine 3, so they didn't cultivate the tech from start to finish. Like, Ubisoft created the Scimitar engine for Assassin's Creed, which later used it for, of course, the following Assassin's Creed games, as well as Prince of Persia 2008. Mm-hmm. And it was temporarily going to be the Splinter Cell engine, but it ended up not being. Yeah. But, I mean, you walk into one of those massive cities in Assassin's Creed and realize I can go from this side to that side, no loading.
Mm-hmm.
It blows your mind. Because you play the open world games and you see there's always some kind of a sacrifice for...
Look at Mass Effect. You have the elevators. Even other games, you have the loading screens. But
yeah, so there's always a way from it, whereas this game is seamless. There's a couple of weird things like anisotropic filtering does?
Yes.
Okay. This game suffers from anisotropic filtering culling. So as you run towards buildings, you show the higher res textures populate.
Mm-hmm.
I try to not to pay attention to that, but I still catch it.
Yeah. And no, I mean, I almost kind of like it because of that, because now I know how they're able to pull this off. I'm a programmer by trade. So seeing these background details that kind of reveals how the game works kind of.
You're at like Brotherhood, right?
I am currently about halfway through Brotherhood. Yes.
So, the one thing I have to say about Brotherhood, I love the game mechanics. I actually like the new outfits in Brotherhood versus mm-hmm. Assassin's Creed 2, even though liking one better doesn't mean I don't dislike the other one.
Yeah.
They're both great offerings. Mm-hmm. The thing that I thought was really weak in Brotherhood, and I don't know why it was, it felt like all the textures had like a layer of static put over them.
Yeah, there's something almost film grainy, and it's like, you wonder if that was intentional or if something just got screwed up.
When you get in the poor section of town, I just like, I want to murder everybody because it's so ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so
that being, Assassin's Creed has really pulled me in lately. It's something that, I don't know, even when it like the main storyline is being really boring and I just don't feel like it, then I'll just, you know, goof around in the city for a little bit. I'll complete side quests. I will kill random people.
I spend time free run for fun. I do the quest, not the quest. I open all the chests to get the money because I'm usually running out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just put on a podcast in the background and use my iPhone to remote control it, iTunes, so I don't have to actually like change back.
Yeah.
I'll tab out of it to change it. Not that it really makes a difference because Assassin's Creed 2, Brotherhood, and Revelations all alt tab like champs.
They really do. I've been alt tabbing a lot out of them.
Actually, if you've got an NVIDIA card, things alt tab very easily usually. The only ones. Some of the Unreal Engine 3 games plus ATI cards, they'll have moments of some will alt-tab well, but not fast. Simply won't alt-tab at all.
That was my only big problem with Tor is it didn't like crash or anything from tabbing out, but when you alt-tab back,
it's got to recover.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
It goes
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yep.
Which is kind of weird because my other franchise I mentioned, League of Legends, for being such a heavy multiplayer game, I've been able to alt-tab in and out of that thing without ever experiencing any form of lag or pop-in. So
with a game like Tor or a game like League of Legends, I would want to play in like a window and like have like something else going on outside of it. I mean, I know that the games can be as involved as you want, but there's just times where it isn't.
Yeah.
I like the busy work in Assassin's Creed because to me it's relaxing to just run around, open chests, and you know, kill the guards who should be so unlucky as to cross my path.
And that's how I play it. Is I'll come home from work, I'll boot up Assassin's Creed, and I'll forget all of the main mission stuff because I don't want to deal with long storyline missions at this point. I will go around and just pick up random assassination contracts, just do the little stuff. And it's nice to be able to run around, especially in Brotherhood, where you're
so funny.
You're
killing people is so relaxing.
Yeah. Well, it's more just the ability to explore the city of Rome and just like, hey, I feel like climbing the Colosseum. I'm going to do it.
You do, yes.
And I do. And that's exactly what I did last week. It's just like, I'm near the Colosseum when I loaded this game. Screw it. I'm climbing this thing.
The insta-kill. After you one guard, you can pin the other resin.
That was just fantastic.
The
insta-kill is nice. He doesn't combo as much with the pistol as I'd like him to, where he kills one guard and then shoots the other one. But that's my only complaint. Otherwise, it's a great system.
In Revelation, he has a new one where he'll do like a lightsaber lock with his sword and their sword, mm-hmm. and he'll push them back, knocking their sword out of the way, and then put his sword through their sternum, up through their head, out their skull.
Whoa.
My God.
Yeah. That's not playing around.
And then he picks them up off the ground all Darth Vader style. I was like, whoa, man. Ezio's not playing.
Nope.
But on the flip side, there are guards that you really can't seem to break their like you can't get through them. You have to like use smoke or something or other assassins to bring them down. But
somebody please get me this game for Christmas. The original Assassin's Creed. I have not played it yet.
Actually,
I would skip the original and just go to 2.
Really? I would recommend starting at 2 unless you really want to get yourself invested in the storyline, which, like I said, it isn't that great, but at the same time, somehow they actually pull you into it. So
2 will tell you everything you need to know at the beginning.
Yeah,
I haven't played the first one, so I started at 2, but yeah. I found it really engaging. I loved the story, as cheesy as it might have been.
Yeah, it's...
And it really did explain what I think... I mean, what I feel like I missed from the beginning, it kind of did what seemed like a rehash at the beginning.
The only thing
that you
miss out on is if you haven't played 1, Revelations will make a little less sense because we see a lot of Altair's interaction with the world.
Yeah, that was the only stuff I didn't understand, was anything having to do specifically with Altair.
We're going to be talking, in Revelations, they're going to be talking about him.
Right, I know.
And he's spoken of with reverence, you know, in the other games, but you just hear about him. And then when we get to Revelations, it turns out that, you know, his world wasn't so rosy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I mean,
hilarious because it's kind of, not really a spoiler, but as you play through Assassin's Creed 1, Altair is a complete asshole. Like, he's an idiot and an asshole, and you don't really like him that much. I've heard Revelations helps that a little bit, but it's,
So it's, you know, I was going to make my favorite franchise Assassin's Creed, so I'm going to skeeze on yours a little bit.
Yeah, no problem.
I love the relaxing bit of it where I can just like listen to a podcast and just run around, murder people, and do other stuff.
There's something messed up.
Relax, kill people, you know, whatever.
Even after you beat the game, you're given free roam mode in all but the first game. Although the first game, you have it if you listen to the Jerusalem speech, but you still have to go through. It's really complex, and it's not worth doing every single time. Whereas any of the other games, you fire it up, and now you're in free roam. But the thing I love is just getting from A to B. Sometimes like you have quick travel ability in Brotherhood. Like, I don't care. I want a free run across the city.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to do that. And I think it's kind of funny. I think it's, if you get like technical, I can't believe that the guards on the roofs think that because you're on the roofs, you are worth killing. I mean, so the kids who happen to wander up on the roof get shot with arrows until they're dead? I don't think so. They cannot.
Oh, that's just a glitch in the Animus. That's just bad coding.
Yeah, so the year that Assassin's Creed 2 came out was also the year Mass Effect 2 came out.
Mm-hmm.
And despite how awesome Mass Effect 2 is, Assassin's Creed 2 is still my game of the year for that year. It's also, ironically, the same year that Uncharted 2 came out.
Mm-hmm.
So this from those three incredibly powerful, strong games, Assassin's Creed 2 is still my favorite of the three.
And that just goes to show how good some of these modern franchises really are.
And isn't it kind of funny? And I see it more than once. It's like the second game invalidates the first game. It's so good, like you don't want to play the first one anymore. Mm-hmm. In a lot of cases, it's happening.
That's the funny thing about BioShock is the second game didn't really do that in terms of story. Like the first game is like the superior one, but the problem is
gameplay wise, it does
so much better.
Yes,
it plays so much more intuitively.
That's exactly the exception I was thinking of in my head. It doesn't have a better story, but gameplay-wise, it was a lot better.
Like, yeah. I wish they would release a version of the first game that like had the controls of the second game.
I feel like that with Assassin's Creed. I want the insta-kill in Assassin's Creed 2.
Mm-hmm.
But also, in BioShock 2, it was also, they must have massaged the tech somehow because it alt-tabbed so much better than BioShock 1.
It really did. Which really makes me curious to see how BioShock Infinite is going to play out.
That is because they were a Games for Windows Live game with BioShock 2. That's a requirement. One of the requirements for Games for Windows Live is, one, it has to work with an Xbox 360 controller, and it has to alt tab properly.
Which it does. It does a lot better than BioShock 1 did.
But then you flip on over, there are games that weren't Games for Windows Live game that just alt tab friendly, like the Transformers game did. Borderlands did. These games weren't Games for the Live, but they still alt tab almost every game these days. Alt tabs like champ.
Mm-hmm.
So Patrick, I don't want you to think I'm leaving you out. What is your favorite franchise?
No, it's very much an interesting question for me. And from what you guys have said, I bet that if, you know, had I had any experience with the Assassin's Creed franchise, I probably would really love it. Unfortunately, I haven't. So really just going off of what I said, I really think it's a tie between Half-Life and Legend of Zelda. Anybody that's played the Legend of Zelda series understands sort of why, you know, I guess I like it so much. The gameplay is always really good. The games are usually very well designed. Like, that's the one consistent thing about Nintendo, you know, say what you will about them, say what you will about churning stuff out, but, like, when they make stuff, it's usually pretty solid. Like, in terms of being, like,
they said something about that. I meant to add this to the bullet points, and I forgot. There was something they said about how they're anti-DLC. They want you to have the complete experience in the box. And I agree with that. I think that should be the way things go. Just like I wish that we could take a vote on Assassin's Creed and remove the damn multiplayer, because nobody wants to play the multiplayer.
No, not really.
So, but I'm interested about your Half-Life statement there. I can't speak to Zelda, but as far as Half-Life, do you mean Half-Life or the Half-Life 2?
I'm talking about, as a franchise, Half-Life.
Because you've actually played the first one?
I've not, but that's not the point. I'm talking about, you know, Half-Life as a series, really, it changed game design after that. You know, its use of technology for its time is incredible. Like, looking at when Half-Life 2 was made and just how good it looks for, like, 2004 or whenever it came out. I don't even
know. Half-Life 2, yeah.
Yeah, it's really impressive. And the other thing,
the
same
resources on the new engine, so it looked the same as it did, but it played better because of the new engine.
Mm.
And I only made it so far just because push come to shove, the game mechanics were just too old.
Yeah, yeah. Which is why I'm highly anticipating some sort of, you know, remake. I'm looking at this Black Mesa thing that's been happening since, what, 6 years?
I really hope that gets somewhere.
I would like to experience
the first game, just to experience it.
Yeah.
But there are things like, you played Half-Life 2 Episode 1 and 2, right?
Halfway through Episode 1, actually.
Okay. Wait till you get to the end of Episode 2, you will hate life.
I know. But,
well, the thing is, a lot of shooters today...
Shut up!
A lot of FPS games have conventions that you're kind of used to that Half-Life kind of doesn't have, mainly because it was mostly before most of the conventions, like aim down the sight. Mm-hmm. You don't have that option on anything.
One thing I like about... I still boot up the old Half-Life
because
it's...
At the same time that Half-Life came out, they also came out with Counter-Strike Source.
Yeah.
And they did have aim down... They did have iron sights on that.
Mm. Well, that's actually something I was going to get to. One of the other reasons I really like Half-Life as a franchise is because all of these other very successful franchises that have come out of it, without Half-Life, we would not have had Counter-Strike. We would also not have had Portal, which technically occurs within the Half-Life franchise.
There's a lot of... They're tying a lot of stuff into the Half-Life, like that little Dungeon Runners game. I can't remember the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
Dungeon
Defenders, yeah. I'm tempted to get Dungeon Defenders just because it looks so goddamn cute.
Mm-hmm.
I heard very good things about it. And then you also have a portal gun and a little...
You have a portal gun in Dungeon Defenders.
Yeah, I just saw that on Steam.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a large portion of the modding scene was born of Half-Life. I mean, as an example, you know, Counter-Strike was only ever a mod,
mm-hmm.
you know, to begin when it began life, and now they're, you know, Valve is actually throwing some real meat and potatoes behind Counter-Strike Go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Team Fortress started out as a mod too.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, technically that was a Quake mod, but you know, it did gain, you know, when they made Team Fortress Classic out of it, and that did, you know, become a pretty, you know, but, you know, and that's partially thanks to Half-Life.
I remember first playing Team Fortress 2 and saying, like, if the Incredibles were a shooter, this would be the game.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is. Heavy, Mr. Incredible, you think that was intentional?
Yeah.
Maybe a little.
But, you know, I think I've mentioned this before, and I'll say it again, one of the reasons I like the Half-Life franchise so much is because when you look at it, it's really sort of like the Christopher Nolan of video games, in that, like, Half-Life, the way it presents the story, the way it tells its story is very intelligent. You know, it's designed very intelligent, but it's also got all those big action-y, you know, aspects that we all sort of come to video games for because we want to blow shit up. And, you know, but that's what I like. You know, you go to a Christopher Nolan movie or you see one of these, you get your action, and you know, but you're also not treated like an idiot. You get your story
delivered
to you in a very intelligent
way.
Sorry, what?
We want to blow shit up and chew bubblegum, by the way.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's another story.
Let's not get started.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, on another note, random note, just as an aside, David, I think maybe if you were looking forward to Duke Nukem, that maybe the Serious Sam new game might be up your alley.
I've heard it's also actually good. After the disappointment of Duke Nukem, I mean, it wasn't a horrible game, but it definitely was not...
Yeah, but Serious Sam is delivering the goods, is the thing. And but the thing is, it's a check your brain at the door shooter type of deal, you know. But that's, you know, what you were expecting.
Yeah.
Moving back to the Half-Life thing, it's just
your brain at the door shooter, it had too many puzzles in it.
I don't think Serious Sam asked that. But with Half-Life, the Half-Life 2 anyway, I didn't play any Half-Life before Half-Life 2, and I was still looking forward to Half-Life 2. They were supposed to have procedurally generated content in the game, where, like, you know, you could play the game 10 different times and have 10 different things happen.
Right.
But in the end, they put it on rails. The coolest thing that I wished had happened was that one Strider walks up to a building and can't get through it, so it shoots the building, but then the building isn't designed to completely destruct after one shot, so it gets down on its haunches and then crawls under the building. Mm-hmm. And this is a massive Strider doing this. Mm-hmm. I thought a scene like that would have been awesome, except, you know, it might not have played out that way, but they didn't deliver on those goods. But what they did deliver on was a really long, immersive, diverse story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for a first-person shooter to give you that much gameplay and that much diversity, that was actually really good.
Yeah.
And I wish more companies would do that. But then Valve is saying, you know, we're moving away from the single-player-only experience, which makes me sad because we just proved with Skyrim that some people do want that. And it's not just some people. It's a lot of people.
And that's actually one of the things that I think I'd wanted to bring up earlier of when we were talking about WoW. And, you know, how that's sort of on a decline and how, you know, also the Old Republic isn't really being received as well as, you know, a lot of people had thought it might be. And this is just my opinion. It's not necessarily true. But, like, based on what I'm seeing, I'm getting the sense that, like, the era of the MMO is sort of ending.
Yeah.
And people are sort of going back towards, you know, single-player games or games that are, you know, largely single-player, you know, experiences. Unless we're talking about things like Call of Duty. But that's not the same thing. That's not like a, you know...
I sort of wish we could push the pendulum back. Like, I think that, like, Modern Warfare 3 should have been sold in two chunks for $30 a piece. Single-player only, multiplayer only.
Yeah.
But they would rather you spend the money, you know, and not play one of them versus buy what you want. Which I totally understand the business sense of that.
And I think that's interesting because that's kind of like what, like, Valve does with games like Counter-Strike, for instance, or, you know, even Team Fortress. Like, you know, they don't fuck around with you. The game is a multiplayer game. That's what it is. It's a game you go on maps and you do stuff. You know, they don't try to, you know, gouge you by having, you know, an unnecessary...
My playmate of Counter-Strike has taught me one thing, that, you know, it does punish you for not being the best player. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that because, like, that's the one good thing they brought into Modern Warfare 3. They have kill streaks that don't reset when you die, because sometimes you get into those games with those people that like live and breathe these games, and there's no winning against them. They're always going to have the drop on you. They've always got the most overpowered weapons. They're going to be rushers, so they're moving lightning fast and they're hard to track. I mean, even my mouse is 3500 DPI. It makes it hard to keep up with these people spinning around me in circle strafing. It's like, I want to be able to have a chance against those kind of people. And Counter-Strike kind of serves up the same serving of pie no matter who you are, which is why there are just days I'm just like, I'm over the whole multiplayer experience. Because it sounds like I'm like saying, you know, I'm too over this shit, but it just comes to a point I'm not as fast or lightning reflex as these teenagers I'm fighting against. So.
And some of them just cheat.
there is that too. When you're in Call of Duty, it's just like peanut butter and jelly. Call of Duty and cheating. You're going to see it. It happens. It even happens on the consoles. Mm-hmm. So I think that's about where we're going to wrap here. Mm-hmm. So I hope everyone had a fun podcast.
I didn't.
You never have fun, though.
David doesn't know what fun is.
He just knows what
all this fun.
So,
oranges and chocolates.
Well, for all of us here at Over the Fence, keep on gaming, and somebody please stop feeding the David. Okay? Thanks.
No,
have a good night.
Keep feeding me. I'm hungry.
David was very capable, and I was very impressed with his rather large gun that he brought to the fight.
Oh, really, David? Tell me more.
That's pretty much all there was to it. Big gun. Very capable.
This might just be the best cover I've ever heard of this, because they turned into an acoustic slow song. I love
Thank
it.
You.
This just got favorited.
Well, just so you know, she's married. So.
Oh,
of course she's Although, married. How can you be as awesome as that and not be married?
Yeah.
You get a car. Everybody gets a car.
Everybody gets a car.
All right. So, I guess just one more time. Is there anything we're missing in the bullet points?
A soul.
I don't think so.
A soul.
Yeah.
We need souls in the bullet points.
Souls.
We need to work on regularity.
Yeah. Yes.
We
seriously.
Something happens.
We need more fiber in OTS diet.
Yes, we do. Okay.
We need more dedication in OTF's diet.
I don't know why that's so hilarious.
Because
David just said it.
Have you not seen how beautiful David is as a pony?
I mean, oh my god. I wasn't sure where that step was going.
Sir, our next.
Did we swear in this one? Oh my god, we gotta have to justify our explicit tag. Just wrap it like that. We could just
Why
talk
the
about.
Fuck do we have to justify that? I mean, seriously, guys.
So,
god damn it.
Like me yelling at you for your SIG being fucking huge.